Good morning, everyone. What a beautiful group. Each day I see new faces, and it's a pleasure to be with you once again this morning to share some of the beautiful message that God has given us to help us experience a more full and abundant life. And how precious to see the stories of mission across the world that Canada is supporting, be it through Adventist Frontier Missions, through Amazing Facts, to all the different ministries that you faithfully participate in, not only with your time, but with your financial support and your prayers. And indeed, God has called each of us to be involved in this ministry as servants of grace. And one way for us to do this job much better is if we have the ability to use all of our faculties, physical, mental, emotional, social, and spiritual abilities to really minister fully and follow God's call for our lives. And so this morning and every morning this week, we're talking about ways that we can embrace and choose the principles that God has given us so we can experience more abundant life, so we can bless others, reaching our world, sharing wholeness and serving all that we encounter in our way. And God's name is honored, and as we do it, we share his love with others who have no hope. So it's our privilege to be here. I would like to just mention some of you who got in early, right before we got started, received this little brochure here. We only have a few, so first come, first serve. I wasn't sure how many people will be here, but I wanted to tell you about it. This is a little bit of a summary of what we as Adventists believe when it comes to healthy living. And it is something that can be used for sharing our message with others. Did anybody receive this morning here? I see your hands. So this is actually freely downloadable from our website. There are two websites. The NAD Health website is nadhealthministries.org, and the GC Health website is healthministries.com. And so if you go there, you can download this as a PDF, and you see it's just a brief overview of 10 principles that we believe in as Adventists, biblically-based principles that are also evidence-based, based on our Adventist health study results, that can help share a message of hope with our neighbors, with those that don't know us. And so I invite you to read it if you got it. If not, you can even order it through AdventSource. This is available for churches for free, up to 100 copies per church. You just pay shipping, of course, Canada. The shipping is a little bit more coming from the U.S. But you can also download it and print it here if you would like. Also, yesterday, some of you who were here received a newsletter. Anybody received a newsletter yesterday? Yeah, I see some hands. That newsletter is the General Conference Health Ministries newsletter that's available freely for anybody who wants to subscribe. And you receive that via your email. So if you would like to sign up, just go to healthministries.com, and you'll see there on that homepage a way for you to sign up and receive these. And these are news from around the world when it comes to health ministries outreach. It has resources, a message from our GC Health Ministry team, and evidence-based information that can be used in bulletin inserts and health minutes in the church or just to share. So we invite you to be connected with what's happening around the world in this area of health and health ministries. And we have been studying this week, based on the book of Deuteronomy, the fact that God gives us choices to experience either life or death. And some of the choices we're talking about this week are listed in this little booklet. I think I mentioned to you, it's called 10 Choices for a Full Life, which I wrote a couple years ago as a mission book, and we distributed it in several languages across NAD. It's available in your, a few of them I think are still available in your ABC. And so we are covering a few of these choices this week. And yesterday and day before we talked about the choice related to physical health in terms of diet, choosing a plant-based diet that is balanced, and also physical activity, the importance of being out in the sunlight. And we yesterday were able to see several of you here representing churches that are participating in the InStep for Life initiative that is now not only in North America, but it's going around the world, and is a way for us to invite our own members to be physically active, but also to connect with our friends, our communities, and be sharing that message with them. So those of you who do have your Fitbit, as our brother said this morning, I saw some hands, you can actually connect the Fitbit to this and you don't need to do anything. It pulls all the data of your activity directly into your account and your church gets the credit. And so here is what the website looks like. If you're not signed up yet, you go here and click where it says not registered, click here. And your church is already there. All you need to do is join, and so you can start to get credit for your physical activity that you do throughout the day. If you don't have a Fitbit, you can enter it through an app, which smartphones have, available for iPhone and Android. But if you don't, you can also enter it in a computer, and these are different ways you can participate. Now, yesterday, we connected the dots when it comes to the 10 leading causes of death and the risk factors related to it, to the actual root causes of why we behave in certain ways. And as some of you may remember, that these root causes are all related to mental, emotional, and spiritual issues. And these deep-rooted issues oftentimes lead us to make not-so-healthy choices. And many of us end up engaging in activities that are not the best for our mental and physical health. But there is this connection. You know, it's not just about what you eat and the exercise, but it's also about how you think, how you embrace the things that happen to you, how you manage stress, how, you know, the deep-rooted issues related to purpose and hope in your life, and how to handle, you know, those frustrations that you have, and et cetera. All those things are important and can impact your physical health. So we saw that depression is one of many ways that many times we end up having symptoms and a disorder that is rooted not just in the way we think, but some of these things that are listed here that Sister White shared with us. And the good news is that once we learn about the root causes of depression and we start to get treated, there's hope for feeling better and overcoming that. And we talked about God's prescription. We talked about how lifestyle helps. And oftentimes people with mild depression can get huge helps from all these lifestyle things if these are root causes of their problem. But we also talked about the fact that people with major depression sometimes may need a medication in order to stabilize the chemistry in their brain and so that they can change their lifestyle. And a third aspect of God's prescription that we talked about, which we'll go deeper today, had to do with improving our brain function. And that involves issues related to breaking from addictions, that oftentimes we search to numb the pain or the brokenness that we experience in our life. And so breaking with those addictions, it could be food addictions, internet addictions, pornography, or even other things that we normally think as substance addictions like alcohol, cigarette smoking, etc. The other aspect of improving the brain function that we talked about was improving our way of thinking through something called cognitive behavioral therapy, which helps us to change the way we think. And that's what we'll go deeper today. And that is related to improving our emotional intelligence. And then tomorrow we'll talk more deeply about our connection with God and how service come into play as we share wholeness and serve all. So all these things are very important to help prevent as well as treat some of these mental disorders like anxiety and depression, which are top in the list of mental disorders. And so today, as we remember what we said about yesterday, the choice to focus on what is true and worthy of praise, cultivating forgiveness and gratitude, we realize that we need to learn first what is it that we as individuals cultivate on a daily basis when we face losses and challenges in our life. And when we find that we have distortions in the way we think, we need to be able to set aside time, seek God for help, so we can then replace those distortions with true thoughts, cultivating more gratitude, more praise in our life, instead of focusing in the negative ways of living. But connected to that today, I also want to encourage us to look at something that oftentimes is linked to distortions. And that is often not thought directly that it relates to health. Sometimes we say, oh, this is social, is more like related to family ministries. And this has to do with our relationships. You know, as it turns out, one of the deep-rooted causes linked to low self-worth, low self-esteem, stressors internally and externally, and many of the root causes we saw in that model that leads to behaviors that lead to death, is unhealthy relationships. And this can start early on when we are very young. And in fact, I ended up doing a part of my dissertation looking at Adventists in North America through the Adventist Health Study who had a history of early child abuse when they were young. And we saw how that connected with their life as adults in terms of their health, their physical, mental health, and also how these adults now facing difficulties in terms of health, physical and mental health, can overcome that through resiliency factors. And so I wanted to touch a little bit on that before we get into how we improve our emotional intelligence as we deal with some of the trauma that we all face. The truth is that we know that early childhood trauma, is definitely a public health problem around the world. We know that it's a hidden problem. It not only happens out there in the world, but it also happens inside the church. And all faiths face this issue. We know that affects the poor and the rich equally. No matter what ethnicity you're from, all of us see that happening and its prevalence. And it does lead to disability and death. And that is why this is such an important issue for us to talk about. There are many unseen scars that come from an experience of child abuse. They are deep and very many times the cause of pain that people take with them for life. There are spiritual wounds that are seen from those traumatic experiences. And it's very hard for somebody who has had that in their childhood to see God as a loving God. Many times they connect God with someone who just didn't care as they were going through that experience. And so there is a lot of need for healing that comes from those experiences. We see there are psychological health issues that result, as well as physical health issues. And so when we looked at the Adventist population, we saw the same. And I'll share that information with you. Some of the consequences that we see in terms of child abuse and neglect, as you can see here, cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, substance abuse, addictions being one, depression, cancer, obesity, overweight, and even premature mortality. All these things have been linked to a history of early trauma. And so many times we think, oh yeah, when we don't go to the doctor, we're going to get treatment. And we think that it is all the things that we do in our lifestyle that may be linked to some of these diseases. But we may not realize that our experiences, the stressors that we experienced early on in our childhood is actually set a whole set of chemical changes, hormonal changes in our body that end up creating a stressful response. And that body stress response leads to many of these chronic diseases. Not only physically, but we also see that in the mental health aspect. We see smaller frontal lobes connected to that, and all the fear, the shame, the guilt, and the stigma that is surrounding this issue can lead to depression, PTSD, and many other things as well. And so I wanted to just tell you how this all happens. Now, not only having experienced that has a negative effect on health, but when someone witnesses their parents having abusive relationships, they too experience this negative impact on health. So even though it's not happening to them, but they see it happening among their parents, the negative impact is just similar to secondhand smoking. We can call it almost like secondhand abuse, because that witnessing of that circumstance creates problems for mental health and physical health. Now, the good news is that even though, you know, many times we cannot avoid the fact that as a child we experience something, there's something we can do to reverse the negative impact on our health. And so there are protective factors that are out there that we'll study about some of them today that can help us reverse all those negative effects in our health. Now, how does it work? And I want to show you a little bit of a model here. I don't know if you can see it from a distance there. But, you know, when we talk about how the body responds to all of our experiences and how that links to health, it's important for us to understand how our brain works. And here you see a little bit your brain. And you see that your brain has the ability to perceive everything that's happening around you and is influenced by the experiences that you have and the stressors in the environment. So, for instance, here you see that environmental stressors at home, at work, and also in your neighborhood, all that has an impact in your brain, how you perceive stress at work, in church, in at the home, or in the neighborhood. Now, another thing that impacts your brain in terms of the perceived stress is major life events. When you lose a spouse, when you go through a divorce, when you experience abuse, like we're talking about, or even trauma of any sort, all those things up here impact how you perceive stress and how you perceive the threat of those things for your health, for your life. And you may feel helpless or you may feel empowered depending on your experience. What matters is two things. First, your individual characteristics matter. If your genes and your development, the way you were reared by your parents, your experience during your childhood years to where you are as an adult, all those things impact how you perceive those experiences here. And another thing that also impacts it is your behavioral responses. Whether you eat well or exercise or you drink or you sleep adequately, all those things can make a difference. If you choose to make negative behavioral choices that are not healthy for you, like smoking, drinking, sleeping late, not exercising, eating a not so healthy diet, all those things will also impact not only your brain, but your physiologic response. And so you see here a cycle. There are the stressors that your brain captures and it starts to produce, you know, certain kinds of hormones and creates a physiological response. But you also have the genes, your experience, your individual characteristics that impact both your brain and also, you know, impact and create a physiologic response in your body. The same way, all these choices that we're talking about, lifestyle choices, your diet, exercise patterns, and so the way you sleep, etc., whether you drink or not, or smoke, or any kinds of addictions like that, also impacts the physiologic response. And so now your body has all this, the brain brings all this information, it starts to produce hormones like cortisol and epinephrine and many other neurotransmitters, and it creates this physiologic response in your body. And connected with your behavior, your lifestyle choices, and your individual differences, your body then becomes either more at risk for some of those diseases that you saw earlier linked to, for instance, child abuse, or less of it. And what your body is trying to create is what we call allostasis, is a balance of all those stressors and the perceived stress and the threats with your characteristics so that your body can respond in a very positive way to all that, creating this adaptation to the stressors. And this is what is at the root of what we call resilience. Anybody heard the word resilience before? So resilience, I love this picture here. You see this baby being born with a smile after all the pain coming through that little tiny place, right? But some people believe that you are born with some characteristics that make you resilient for no matter what happens in life. But the truth is that we have learned more and more over the years that resilience actually is something that we can learn and grow. So, in essence, a definition is that is how you, resilience allows you to cope positively and adapt to all negative stressors and trauma and whatever it may be that you face in your life. And regardless of going through those adversities, you seem to, you know, bounce back from it and actually do well in life and be well, have better health outcomes mentally, physically. And is defined, as I said, as a lifetime process, not just something you're born with, as people used to think, but something you can grow and learn along your life. And this is very important. Resilience in studies have shown to be able to stop that stress, negative stress response that we have in the body, the physiologic responses I was just talking to you about. So here's an example. You have all the perceived stress that your brain captures from home, work, you know, school, the environment, and all the trauma that you've experienced, and all that is your, what we call allostatic load, your stress load over all these years. Then that links to, as you saw, a propensity to illness, a vulnerability, risk to have both mental and physical issues that are negative, like diabetes, cardiovascular disease, etc., as you saw. Now, when you have very little resiliency factors, you have a worse risk and more vulnerability to disease. But as your resiliency factors go up, this is like an equation that kind of balances out and stops the production. In fact, they've seen this in research, that the more resiliency factors you have, the production of negative amounts of cortisol that come due to stress is stopped. And so the negative impact in the body is much less. And so those are things that we need to keep in mind when we think about choosing a full life. What are the resiliency factors that we need to embrace as we face the brokenness in this world? Now, if we're living in this world, and we were talking about this over the weekend, and now we, even, you know, the last few nights, we are realizing that we are in a broken world, and we are broken people who have faced all kinds of trauma, and many of us have had very negative relationships, perhaps, even as a child, that we had no choice about. And as we grow, now we have pains and this brokenness that we carry, besides all the sin and all the choices that are innate in our own bodies, in our own lives, due to sin in this world. And so it's important for us to know how can we learn the resiliency factors and incorporate more and more of them so that we can experience more life, more health in every way, and then be better able to be servants of grace. Well, here is a study that was done that actually points out several resiliency factors. As I mentioned to you early on Monday, we always like to bring information that is evidence-based, in line with spirit of prophecy, with the Bible, but also based on research. And so a researcher a few years back looked at what are some resiliency factors that help us to break that cycle of, you know, the negative production of neurotransmitters like cortisol, etc., that impacts our health. And they came up with several of them, which we'll talk a little bit more this morning. One is positive emotions, cultivating the positive. Things like cultivating gratitude and forgiveness and all those virtues that we talk about helps to stop the negative production of chemicals that are not so good. And so when we are thinking about that, we can say we have always a choice to be negative about things and critical and dwell on the pains, or we have a choice to look at things in a positive way, looking for what are the blessings and actually focusing on those. In order to do that comes the second factor. We need cognitive flexibility. This was also noted as one resiliency factor. The person who has high resiliency, they're able to reappraise what happens in their life, whether it happened late, last night, or whether it happened long, long, long time ago when they were young. And reappraising those circumstances in a positive light, you know, focusing on positive emotions, it's very, very important. Looking for truths and not distortions. Replacing distorted views and cognitions and thoughts that we might have had about those experiences with true ones. Remember, the choice is to think about things that are true and worthy of praise. Humor is noted as one important resiliency factor. So it's always a choice for you to be mad about something, about yourself, or feel bad, or just laugh about it. And, you know, try to be more light about things that happen that are not so good sometimes, or mistakes even that we make. Another one is acceptance. This is a very important factor. Some of you might have read or even seen the Serenity Prayer that says, Lord, help me to do what? Remember? Accept the things that I cannot change, right? And then change the things I can and have the wisdom to know the difference. So many times there are things in life we just need to accept. Now, there are times that we need to change certain things. And knowing the difference between the two requires wisdom from the Spirit. And so acceptance is also a resilience factor that they've noted. Another one they've noted, and these are secular researchers, is our faith. Religion is spirituality. When we have an active faith, which we call an intrinsic religiosity, is noted as that in research, something that is deep inside us that helps us to embrace and live our faith every day, a connection with our God, spirituality, that can be helpful as well for us to be more resilient. There is altruism, and that's where the service comes in. When you do something for someone else without expecting anything in return, that is a factor for resilience. And many of you might have noticed, when you are helping someone, when you are serving, you forget your own problems many times and your own stressors. And it brings endorphins that help you feel better. And so you can see how altruism, that agape love that we live in service, can be helpful as a resiliency factor. Then there's other things like social support. Having a community, a family, someone that is there next to you, helping you deal with the stressors, with the problems in life, is another very important factor for resilience. And so we are blessed when we have the family of God. We are part of a community of faith, such as the church here so that you know there are people praying for you and supporting you along the way when you face difficulties. And then there are other things like role models, people that actually have lived and dealt with difficult circumstances that serve as a role model for our lives. And that along other things like exercise, sleep, which also are important. So here are some of the resiliency factors that we can cultivate in order to reverse some of the negative impact that the stressors of life, the adversities of life, the trauma that we have faced, might have faced, or will face, can have in our bodies. Now, going back to the study of trauma early on, and how this links in an evidence-based way, I just want to share with you some data from the Adventist Health Study that looks at how, in our own Adventist community in North America, and that is U.S. and Canada and some of the Caribbean islands, like Bermuda and other Caribbean islands, how that population fares when it comes to the trauma in early childhood. When we looked at that, it was about a little over 10,000 people that were in this study, in the Adventist Health Study, as part of the Behavioral, Religion, and Health Study. It's a subgroup of the large Adventist Health Study, which is almost 100,000 people. This one is a little smaller group that decided, and some of you may be part of the Behavioral, Religion, Health Study. It was a second questionnaire that was sent out to people who were willing to participate. And some of the questions asked had to do with family life and included the history of trauma in the family. And what we found out is that in this group of 10,000 blacks and whites primarily, we removed all Hispanics, which was just a small number of people, and we wanted to do comparisons by race between blacks and whites. We kept just blacks and whites. And so you can see here five different types of early trauma. Some related to abuse and others to neglect and witnessing abuse. So physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, as well as neglect and witnessed abuse. We wanted to find out, the fact that Adventists have better diets and exercise and lifestyle, does that perhaps change the research that's done out there that says that those early traumatic events link to health? Maybe we don't have negative impact because we eat well and we exercise. So we wanted to find that out through this study. First, we looked at the prevalence. And here, what you see, the dark blue is the total number participating, the 10,000 people. And so what we see is that lots of people here, and you can't see because of the numbers, I guess, in the screen there. But it says about 38% of the whole population in this study had physical abuse, said that they, as a child, experienced physical abuse. Then emotional abuse, almost the same number, almost 38%. And then sexual abuse, a very high percentage, higher than the general population, about 27% said they experienced child abuse. And then neglect, also very high, as well as witnessing abuse in a home. So in essence, we are seeing that in many of these cases of physical, emotional, sexual, you know, of abuse in general, trauma, we have even higher percentages than the general population out there in this representative sample of North America. And if you were to ask if people had at least one out of the five types, we see a very high percentage, about 68% of people having a high prevalence or having had at least one type of abuse. And I'm going to just give you those numbers here in this chart, which just summarizes the percentages of each type of abuse, as you can see. And as I said, if you look at this and compare it with the general population out there, it's very high numbers. If you are familiar with the data of early child abuse out there, at least in the U.S. and around the world, you will see that these are high numbers. So what it tells us is that it is happening right here in our own churches. And it can impact people's health. If I were to ask you, and you don't need to answer this, but if I were to ask how many of us here in this group, we have, what, maybe 100 people here, a little more than 100, how many have had one of these five types of abuse, maybe we would be raising our hands. I'm sure we would have a number of people here. What we also found, if you were to compare between males and females, women seem to be more at risk for all of the different types of abuse, except in the case of physical abuse, where it's the same prevalence than males. So for physical abuse, is the same. Everything else is much higher in the women, and particularly here, sexual abuse, you can see almost three times as much prevalent among women than men in the study. So again, you can see when we talked yesterday about depression and why women have higher rates and how one of the factors was linked to abuse, you can see why. Here too, when you look at race, we compared blacks and whites, and we see that there, among our population at least, which was primarily North America, the higher percentages and prevalence was among the black community, or at least a black population, except in the case of neglect. This is 24% here, you can see, but 32% among whites. So in terms of neglect, whites had more, at least reported more neglect. So what does that matter? Well, it matters because, first of all, you know, if we, as the children of God, who believe in the Bible and believe in the love of God and living our life at home as if it was a piece of heaven, if we see this, something is not right. And so we need to be able to do more to prevent and help people who are survivors of this kind of abuse. But secondly, we see in this chart here that even though, in essence, most Adventists eat better and exercise and have a healthier lifestyle, as it was pointed out, they live 10 to 12, 13 years longer than the general population. Still, if people experienced abuse early on in childhood, they had worse negative health impact, both for physical health as well as for mental health. So in this study here, you know, if people had at least one type of abuse out of the five, physical, sexual, emotional abuse, or neglect, or witness abuse, you can see here that their scores for mental health went down, and then also for physical health went down. So it's a negative impact on health. But as the experiences went up and they had more than one type of abuse, maybe they had at least three types or at least five types of abuse listed here, you can see that a worse negative impact on health was seen, both for mental health and physical health. So diet or exercise or those lifestyle necessarily didn't protect them from the negative impact on health. And what then perhaps protect them? And this is what another question I went to ask. I said, how about faith and religion and the ability to forgive the perpetrators of abuse? How about gratitude and being able to live a life, you know, full of praise and gratitude despite the negative experience? And we went and first saw that in this group, in the Adventist Health Study group, we had very high levels of religious involvement, both in terms of attending church and having a connection with God, which is intrinsic religiosity, using faith in a positive way to cope with difficulties, and that's called positive religious coping, and also forgiveness and gratitude. So here you can see that all those positive religious involvement factors, except for negative religious coping, had a positive impact on health. And better mental health and physical health for people who had those positive experiences with God and their faith. However, when people use faith in a negative way, meaning they felt punished by God, they felt God neglected them and left them to suffer their abuse or whatever other circumstance, if they had used their faith in a negative way, feeling shameful or neglected or having fear of being mistreated by others, that actually had a negative impact on health, both physical and mental health. And it was a high percentage among the people in the group. And so When you put this together with the history of trauma, what we learned is that people that use their faith in a positive way, through prayer, through forgiveness, gratitude, using those virtues and experiences, they were able to lessen the negative impact on health regardless of their trauma experience. And if they used the negative religious coping, feeling punished by God, neglected by God, or even if God didn't care for the abuse they suffered, then their negative health outcome was much worse. And this is what we saw. Again, this is the early trauma that they faced, and here is health. We saw that was a negative impact on health, but when religious coping was in place, and when forgiveness was in place, all of that gratitude and all that, that had a positive impact and less of a negative impact on health. So those were protective factors that we were able to actually document through the research that we did. And why does that matter? It matters because, again, as a church who is here to be servants of grace in a world that is coming to an end, perhaps we may need to do more among our own families to develop healthier relationships and help those who are at risk. We need to raise awareness and help people to build resiliency factors so they can reverse the negative impact that the experiences of trauma may have. And also make people accountable, clarifying issues related to distortions. There are people that say, no, you know, if you're going through an abusive relationship, this is something the home, the family has to deal with. Well, we need to be able to see what does the Bible say about that, and how can we help each other as families? How can we help ensure there's love and understanding, and that the community can come in and help the families that are broken, so that they can experience a more healing environment? And for the survivors, many times they have no place to go, somebody to talk to. So we need to be able to provide more of an open healing environment and ability for them to speak to us. And many of you have heard of the initiative End It Now, which is focusing on that. Anybody has never heard of End It Now? Let me see here. I see several hands. So End It Now is the official campaign that the Adventist Church has had now for nearly 7 to 8 years, focusing on raising awareness about trauma and abuse within the church, both for children, men, women, the elderly, anyone now, and it's been expanded to anyone more recently this last 2 years. And we have had here in North America a major summit twice already over the last quinquennium. And the General Conference has also brought together all the ministries, family ministries, health, ministerial, children's ministries, education, many others, to help us get the word out about why we should be involved and the importance that this has, both for health, but also for us to continue to complete the mission that we have in an effective way. So in Isaiah 61, he says that God has sent us to heal the brokenhearted, to comfort all who mourn, to console those who mourn in Zion, giving them beauty for the ashes. And some of these traumatic experiences and the adversity that we find, they are ashes that we carry heavily. And no matter if you were or not a survivor of abuse or in a negative relationship, you may have other burdens that you are carrying, other kinds of brokenness that you experienced. And God wants first to change that, give you beauty for those ashes, so you can have a spirit, a garment of praise, instead of the heavy spirit of brokenness that we carry. Because as we do that, He is glorified. Isn't that beautiful? Once we experience that kind of healing in our relationship with God, we can then be able to reach the world sharing that healing with others. But for that, we need to be able to focus and make an intentional choice to focus on things that are true. It is not true that God had His arms held back when we are going through the traumatic events that we are going through. Just like His son on the cross, went through and paid the price for us, and God was there, He's also there when we experience these traumatic events. But He has a much bigger picture of the great controversy in mind. And while many of us go through the pains and sufferings, God's still there to help us heal from those experiences so we can grow and be able to bless others with that. So focusing on the true thoughts, removing distortions, focusing and giving Him praise through gratitude, and forgiving those who hurt us, all these things can actually, in the end, work together to produce better health outcomes for us. I thought it would be important to include this because many times we forget that it's not just what we eat, the exercise that we do, the lifestyle that we have, but the relationships that we develop and cultivate that also impact our health and well-being and our ability to serve. So I pray that God will help us to improve more how we respond to the adversity in life, to help us build some of those resiliency factors that we listed today, so that we can grow from our pain and brokenness and then be better able to serve Him as servants of grace. I want to leave you with a beautiful text that I find in the book Education. And this text is, many of you might have come across. It says that the water lily can be surrounded by slimy, dirty waters, even weeds, even rubbish. But despite of her poor conditions, what she does is she strikes down its stem to the pure sand beneath all that junk, all that pain. And then from there, it draws life, lifting up its fragrant blossoms to the light in spotless purity. What a perfume it brings in such an unlikely place. You know, many times we have gone through experiences and we go through our life experiences that are slimy, dirty waters that we were surrounded with. But God is calling us today to, you know, send our stem down beneath all of that to the pure sand of His Word, of the pure truths that He has for us, the promises that He has for us. And from there, from connecting with Him, we can then draw a beautiful fragrance to the world surrounding us, a fragrance of grace, so we can serve despite our negative circumstances. So I pray that each of us today will experience that and allow God to work in us the healing that He needs to work so that we can then reach our world with His love and grace. Shall we pray for that? Father in heaven, Lord, we are so grateful for the knowledge that regardless of the pains and experiences we may have experienced, the trauma, the negative, painful moments that we carry, that You are able to help us heal from that. And that as we find in You new meanings and new ways of looking at what we faced, that You'll be able to make us more resilient and then a better servants of grace to others who are also perhaps going through pains. I ask You, Lord, to be with each person here, each family represented, helping all of us to be able to have better relationships, both in family, at home, at work, at church, and also to be able to choose better ways of thinking, focusing on the truths that Your Spirit can teach us, cultivating forgiveness and gratitude, so that we can then experience more abundant life physically, mentally, and also spiritually, so we can better serve. May Your name be honored through our lives today, is my prayer. In Jesus' name, amen.